almost a third of TV viewers can only be reached by streaming, yet 90% of TV ad revenue still goes to traditional linear TV. Netflix had a banner 2020, but signs are it has a value problem in Latin America. Listen on to find out more.
And hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Video News and Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon is with me from the windy Bay Area, right, Colin? You said your house was getting blown around today.
It was certainly pretty windy yesterday, but they died down a little bit today, which is good. But I wanted to ask you about this Tom Brady guy. My goodness, he leads the Patriots, and GOAT. What is he doing with Tampa Bay? My goodness.
He's the GOAT. Once again, he's proving it. Doesn't matter the team. Just matters the player, right?
It seems like you can make a difference. Talking about making a difference, 2020 was definitely the year of AVOD and the FAST services. And Tubi put out some really interesting information, and you looked at it, and I looked at it. So why don't you catch us up on what Tubi had to say?
Yeah, we want to spend a little time talking about Tubi and the growth of AVOD today, where it fits into the ecosystem. And we also want to talk a little bit about SVOD, so both sides of the coin, because, of course, this week we had the Netflix Q4 and full year 2020 results, which were pretty robust. And I think taken together, we get a nice set of insights about how the industry is continuing to grow and evolve. And certainly a big catalyst this year was COVID and stay at home and viewers flocking to more and more of the streaming services. And that, I think, showed up to some extent in the new Tubi report. Tubi published a report called The Stream 2021 Actionable Audience Insights for Brands, and essentially published a whole slew of data about its viewers and how advertisers are capitalizing on with campaigns to its viewers to reach viewers that they cannot otherwise reach. And a big top line number that came from the Tubi report is that 80%, as it said, 80% of its viewers can now not be reached via the top 25 rated cable TV networks. Because there is such a prevalence of cord cutters among the Tubi audience. In fact, they said that 48% of their viewers no longer have pay TV. In addition to 80% not being reachable through the top 25 cable TV networks, Tubi also said 68% can't be reached via other AVOD services, and 64% can't be reached through Tubi's own parent, Fox. So, and also parenthetically, that Tubi now gets 84% of its viewers watching on a connected TV, which I also thought was pretty incredible. So Tubi has grown strongly. They said they're up to 33 million monthly active users at the end of 2020, 2.5 billion hours streamed across the 30,000 titles. And all of that is really meant to support, in its report, meant to support the proposition that advertisers can no longer just use linear TV if they want to reach the full spectrum of viewers. And I think that, you know, that's a point that actually has been made by online video providers and ad tech providers for many years, but I think is becoming ever stronger now as a result of the push toward streaming, the acceleration of streaming viewership, and also the increase in cord cutting, and of course also the reduction in linear viewing. So all of those points I thought were very well made by Tubi, and they shared a number of really interesting case studies on different advertisers, how they have accessed the Tubi audience, which why don't we get to in just a minute, but maybe I'll just stop there, Colin, for your reactions. And just one last point was that, Tubi, and I think this is really the main reason for the report, is that even for all the bullishness on streaming and everything else, the reasoning for video for advertisers to move budget over, 90% of video ad budgets still go to linear TV. And so we have this kind of ever broadening gap between viewership, particularly among younger audiences, a gap between their viewership on streaming and the amount of ad budgets that are being allocated toward that. So that's really the issue that Tubi and all the others, whether it's Roku or YouTube or all the other AVOD services, that's what they're really trying to solve for, is to close that gap between streaming viewership and streaming ad spend.
It certainly is, Will. And I've got to tell you, it's this difference, this dissonant situation that we find ourselves in with advertising, I think is just going to be amplified in 2021, that's for sure. And interestingly, I was listening to Scott Rosenberg on Variety's Strictly Business podcast, and he was talking about this exact issue, and he made the point that he thinks that 30% now of viewers in the United States is unreachable through traditional TV, and that the only way to reach them is through platforms like Roku and Tubi, of course, on Roku. And that I think is definitely being borne out by what we're seeing in lots of the data. One of the things I was really interested in with the Tubi data was they said that the average viewer of Tubi was 20 years younger.
Right.
Than a linear TV viewer, and that's a huge difference, and really does, I think, reinforce the point that there's a whole group of people now that are not reachable through traditional television, and that I think is going to lead to lots of innovation. So, yeah, the Tubi data to me certainly does speak pretty clearly to the changes that we're seeing and to the migration that we're seeing, Will. I totally get where they're coming from.
And I think the Tubi report also speaks to the issue that some people have about capping off the number of subscription video on demand services that they're going to take. And that number has steadily gone up. I think you and I have talked about that on the podcast a few weeks ago. It wasn't that long ago when it was, between 2 and 3 services. Now I think it's on average about 4 services. That number may still increase for, some subscribers, but there's going to be a broad swath of others who just say enough is enough. And what they're really going to be interested in is free viewing options. And I think that's what Tubi is really very much focusing on itself. It's obviously a free, completely free ad-supported service, just like some of the others, Pluto, Zumo, Roku Channel, YouTube, etc. And I think all these free services are really going to see, to the extent also that their content continues to get better and better, I think they're all going to see big increases in viewership going forward for that reason, because there's some degree of subscriber fatigue out there.
Yes, I think so, Will. And all the data that we're getting from other FAST services, free ad-supported streaming TV services, and even some of the smart TV platforms, they're all sporting now a lot of free content embedded in their interfaces. All the indications are that there was extremely strong growth last year. So I think Pluto says it's now up to 28.4 million monthly active users, probably north of that. Even as we speak, because that was a date data point given to us just before the holidays, I think. Massive growth in AVOD, and this was something that Scott Rosenberg came back to a few times in that discussion on Strictly Business, and that was where AVOD really fits into the equation, and I thought he had an interesting view of that, Will. He was saying that there's definitely going to be room for premium streaming services in people's bundle and for some niche services, and that's certainly reflecting my usage, and I think the data is bearing out that that's the case. And is it 4, is it 5 or 6? I don't know. But he quite rightly states that what is the place for library content and less, I suppose, directly monetizable content in that equation? And the answer is it's free. And the behavior that we're beginning to see is that people do enjoy and watch their streaming, their paid streaming services, but they're very, very happy to extend their viewing and open up their viewing to ad-supported services to sort of augment that. And just looking at my behavior, sometimes I just don't want to, you know, I just don't want to make a decision, and flipping on to one of these fast services and letting a channel play is just a great way of continuing to sort of fill that entertainment void. So there's lots of growth, I think, here for ad-supported. I will say, though, that I think the role of ad-supported is changing, and that it's really beginning to, I think, fill a void, fill a need in a little bit of a different space than it has traditionally. I mean, traditionally it was appointment viewing that we sat down and we all watched together, and that was, we watched the ads for the shows at the prime time viewing time. I think that viewing behavior now is probably going to trend more towards SVOD, and the more general viewing, when you just want to put something on, you just want to be entertained, that may accrue to AVOD services and to these fast linear streaming services. So I think that behavior is definitely what we're going to start to see. And I think that's really what Scott Rosenberg was sort of suggesting there, that there's a lot of opportunity for library content and for other content, non-mainstream content, to come to be shown there. And a great example there, of course, is Roku buying the Quibi content. Quibi was also showing ads with its subscription. People didn't want to pay. Well, Roku's now going to find out if they are happy to watch that content with just the ads. And I got a feeling that they're going to have much more success with it than Quibi did, because there was a lot of good content there. And I think it'll work very well inside of Roku's the Roku channel. I think it'll work very well there. Short bites inside of Roku channel. I think that could work really well.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think we talked about this, I think, just last week, but the value of library content is with that, you know, sort of comfort viewing dynamic that we're seeing during the pandemic, that people want to be able to watch content that's familiar to them, that's comforting to them. And that's a key to success of something like Peacock. And I think I saw an interview earlier this week with a NBCU executive that said that Peacock has already seen The Office become the most viewed title on Peacock. Probably no big surprise there, given the amount of promotion that they've given it. But also that I think it was said 20% of the consumption has come from super fan episodes and themed collections and playlists. And I think that's content that's available in the subscription and the premium tier of Peacock. So we'll get some more data directly from Peacock in the near future. But no question, AVOD and free content has become a really important part of the industry over the past year. No question that SVOD services have continued to proliferate. And just to shift gears here, Colin, the king of the hill in the SVOD space continues to be Netflix, as we saw earlier this week from its earnings results in Q4 and for year end. And we want to talk a little bit about that. So what were your key takeaways?
Yeah, I just want to mention before we go to that, Will, one of the other things that Scott Rosenberg said was he made some comments about the particularly how difficult it is to get deals done. As we know, there's been some big fights between HBO Max and Peacock and Roku. And he pointed directly at the ads. And one of the things he said was that just the plumbing of how two parties collaborate on things like ad insertion and targeting in measurement is more complicated. So sometimes that's a rub, that's a friction point, I guess, for those deals. So clearly advertising becoming much more important, and I think we could probably expect some more tussles between Roku and big providers who are doing advertising supported. Perhaps HBO Max will be next when it introduces its advertising tier. But anyway, let's talk about Netflix. A great quarter for the company. It added, 8.5 million subscribers around the world. But more importantly, it added 37 million subscribers in 2020 to bring it to 203.7 million subscribers around the world. The biggest region is still the USA and Canada. There's 74 million there. That's up 9.3% versus Q4 2019. EMEA, though, is catching up fast, and I have a feeling by the end of this year that there will be more subscribers to Netflix in Europe, Middle East, and Asia than there are in the USA and Canada region. Really strong growth in other regions, particularly Asia-Pac. 57% increase to 25.5 million. So, you know, if anybody is wondering about Netflix and whether it's a globally focused business, my goodness, as I said, only 74 million of the subscribers are in the USA and Canada. The rest of that 200 million are around the world. So that's going to be a key driver for Netflix going forward. And interestingly, I always like to listen in to the earnings call, Will. And Ted Sarandis was talking about a lot of the foreign content that is receiving a lot of viewers in the US now. And he seems to think that those are really working, that they're attracting a lot of viewers. And sure, the English language stuff does better, but you know, the international stuff is also doing extremely well for the company too. And just a note, revenue also grew pretty strongly, 25% up on the year to just shy of $25 billion. And that revenue growth is a little bit down on 2019, but still, $25 billion is a pretty decent size business, I would say. And looks like that growth could continue this year, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, actually, just on a quick note about the international programming, we just watched Borgen in our house. I don't know if you've watched that yet. It's a Danish show subtitled into English. So there's an example of the international programming. And we like that. It's interesting to see a totally different take on things. I'm guessing that, as you said, that's been successful for Netflix in the U.S. But just to follow up one point of yours, Colin, about the U.S. and Canada being about 74 million or so of their 200 plus million subscribers, the average revenue per month per subscriber in the U.S. and Canada is still by far the highest, and they reported it at $13.51. In Q4, that was higher than in EMEA, $11.05 per month, APAC, $9.32 per month, and LATAM, $7.12 per month. And actually, LATAM decreased. It was the only region of the four that actually saw average revenue per month per subscriber decrease from Q1 to Q4 this year. And I don't know whether that was due to a currency fluctuation or not, but it dropped from $8.18 in Q1 again to $7.12 per month. I don't know if you had a perspective on that or not.
I sure do, Will. And that was actually something that really stuck out to me in the conversation in the earnings call. And it was kind of surreal to me. It started off with Reed Hastings talking about how modest ARPU growth, average revenue per unit or per person, per subscriber. He talked about how modest ARPU growth is a virtue of the service. So he says it's about 10% over 3 years, so pretty cautious, and it's working well for us to provide incredible value. And so, you know, certainly the data that you threw out certainly seems to suggest that keeping the price low has been very successful at helping grow subscribers, which is key to their approach. But this thing with LATAM and a little bit with Asia Pac as well really sort of stuck in my craw, because his blanket statement about the growth of ARPU really doesn't reflect what's going on in the regions. And in particular in LATAM, as you said, LATAM, the average revenue has gone down pretty dramatically. And I wanted to highlight how much it had gone down since Q4 2017. It's actually fallen 18%. Now, of course, some of that could be due to currency fluctuation. But I wanted to highlight something that Greg Peters said. He's the chief product officer. And he was talking about how they assess if they can raise price in a particular region. And he said, we think about engagement with the service, retention and churn characteristics, acquisition. Those are things that we are looking for that are key to basically saying, okay, we've added more value in the service. Now is the right time to go back to those members and ask them to pay a little bit more so that we can reinvest and keep adding. So that's how they're judging value. Well, if you look at LATAM, they're not delivering value well. Even if the decrease is really due to currency fluctuation, they're getting no increase. They're not able to increase the price in Latin America. And I've got to tell you, it's been that way for longer than 2017. So I really think they may have a value proposition problem in the Latin American region that they still haven't gotten right. And the same is true with Asia Pac, although they have acted decisively in regions like India to attack that. So I think we talked on the podcast before about how out of sync Netflix pricing was with the India region, particularly with Disney's Star service. And they've taken decisive action there. They lowered the price pretty dramatically on Netflix. They've made it more mobile friendly. And that seems to be working pretty well because, as I said, Asia Pac turned in the biggest growth of all regions in Q4. But you know, not in LATAM and Latin America, they continue to have problems. They had problems, I remember, when they first entered the market because people didn't have credit cards and couldn't pay. It really seems to me like they're continuing to struggle in that region. So that's a work in progress still for them, I think.
What do you think it is, Colin? Do you think it's a content problem, competition, price point too high, all of the above?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of things. Many of the broadcasters in that region have gone pretty hard into online as well. So there's lots of competition from traditional broadcasters. There's still lots of viewing of free-to-air TV. Penetration of pay TV isn't as high in many of those countries as it is here. And I think that that's all a factor there that is making it really hard for Netflix to grow as fast as they would like, and maybe they should be in that region after being there for 9 years. They entered the region in 2011, and I think they actually entered Latin America right after they went into Canada. So it was like the second international market that they entered. So one would have thought they would be doing better by now.
Yeah, well, I think just stepping back, Colin, it was an incredible year for Netflix, as you said at the beginning. Adding the nearly 37 million subscribers. That was up from 27 million or so, 28 million subscribers added in 2019. And COVID really changed, I think, completely the trajectory of the company. There was reason to believe, going back and looking a year ago at what I'd written about Netflix, looking at Q2 data from 2019, when they actually lost subscribers, that there was reason to believe that Netflix was going to lose subscribers in Q2 20 again, and that they might even lose subscribers in Q1 20. But COVID completely upended all prior assumptions about Netflix's growth. And, you know, they have said themselves that they think that they've pulled forward a lot of growth, but they continued growing above projections, above forecast, right through the end of the year. So got to give them huge kudos. Been quite a year for them, and, you know, certainly emblematic of the broader streaming landscape.
Yeah, and what's very clear is that that's not restricted to Netflix. Look at the fantastic growth for Disney Plus. Yep. We've seen tremendous pickup of Peacock, and even some signs of life with HBO Max. They their Wonder Woman release in in December seems to have donated another 500,000 subscribers to that service. So, boy, big growth all round, I think. And to some extent, some of that will continue into this year. But we'll have to see what happens when, hopefully later this year, we all come out of lockdown. But I think we may be pretty much out of time this week, don't you?
Yeah, I think so, Colin. So good talking as always, reviewing both the AVOD and the SVOD sides of the market. And thanks, everybody, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. And we look forward to seeing you next week.